Hello, everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, your weekly slice of comics and manga goodness. I'm Andrew, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Rob.
Hello.
And Mick.
Hello.
I say as always, that there's been frequent times when one or both of you hasn't been here.
Hang on, what do you mean, or both of you?
I mean, I'm sure.
No. Those are the days where we changed the day.
So Andrew turned up in the hangout by himself.
That's why there's 107 more episodes of 4Panel than you were aware of.
Right. That explains a lot.
Accidentally met on the existence of secret 4Panel.
Yes. West Coast 4Panel.
No. It might be like Secret Millionaire, where Andrew's just doing a show in disguise. He's even disguised his voice.
And then, of course, don't forget there's also those weeks where there's just some voices in your head.
Wait, whose head?
Either or.
I was going to say, I'm still waiting for clarification. So, how is everyone this week?
Nah, still breathing.
Just given the catastrophic weather and massive amounts of illness going about, that's kind of all we can hope for, I think.
The catastrophic weather, it's
there's been a bit of snow, Mick. It doesn't get more cataclysmic than that.
You know, it's not like the world ground to a halt. It's not like we live in Kent.
After so many years, Mick, you should know that this country, as soon as there's even the bit of snow...
No.
It turns
not
into the day
country,
after tomorrow.
Not this country, Kent.
This country in general. Trust me.
As much fun as it is to dunk on specifically Kent, we are a comics and manga podcast.
No.
So we should probably get on with some comics and manga.
Yes, let's do that.
Yeah, so this week we are going to, well, we're going to keep on talking TV stuff because comic-based TV properties are kind of hot right now.
They really are.
We're kind of in the midst of talking about a lot of them. We covered Titans last week. We're probably going to be covering Punisher next week. Oh, I have things to say about that.
Yes.
But for this week, we are going to be getting our speculative hats on as we think about what comics would make good TV shows?
See, that's an interesting one.
It is. I think it's especially become more interesting because I feel like the go-to answer, even just a few years ago, would be just to say, oh, well, any property that doesn't really require, like, high-budget action.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we've got stuff like Marvel spinning off a lot of their movie properties into TV stuff. We've got Netflix kind of shoving substantial budgets on things. And, like, we have a Flash TV show.
Yes.
We do.
As much as I've cooled on Flash, I still enjoy the episodes every now and then. It's just I wouldn't say I was a regular watcher, but to be able to do a Flash TV series in the first place and actually make it look good.
I think that's the thing. But what I find confusing about the DC shows is their policy on characters.
Yeah.
Because they've said they don't want to mix various characters across media. And yet we've got Grant Gustin's Flash appearing on screen at the same time as Ezra Miller's cinematic Flash. And yet they've used that as an explanation for putting the kibosh on the use of certain characters in, for instance, Gotham.
Yeah, I feel like the problem is it started off with just a, yeah, sure, we'll do whatever. Then as we know, the DCEU or whatever its official name has maybe perhaps not had the strictest planning.
Yeah.
But I feel like as they've kind of built that up more, they've kind of tried to say, okay, I mean, the Flash we're going to have to let go because that's already a successful TV show, but we're going to try and do stuff like the Suicide Squad. Remember when the Suicide Squad just got abruptly killed off because they were going to do a movie instead?
Yeah.
But then in recent years, I think that's become a bit more relaxed as the movies have maybe not taken off as well as people would have liked.
See, I thought Suicide Squad might have been better as a TV show, something more akin to the A-Team type thing.
Yeah, that was something I had on my list, but not the A-Team, because I think it is very specifically Mission Impossible.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Because that is actually what the basis of the original comic was.
Yes.
Was what if we do Mission Impossible, but with supervillains? And yes, I would like some of that, please. But also, don't do the Arrowverse thing. I want like supervillains with actual code names and costumes and distinct personalities, not man in leather jacket and other man in leather jacket.
Other man in leather jacket with tattoo.
Other man in leather jacket, but this one has funny eyes.
Other man in leather jacket with tat 3.
Oh, no.
Yes, I know. I've got it out the way, though.
No. Oh, wait, we forgot rounding off the squad. Man in leather jacket, who is that guy you recognise from that one TV show?
Oh, yeah, there's him.
Oh, and quirky-looking girl that's been in a host of other genre TV shows that you've never seen outside of those genre TV shows.
Gosh, you're right. How could I forget her?
Yeah. But I think that the other advantage that a TV format will give to the Suicide Squad is something that we missed out on in the movie, which was that you'd get the chance to explore each individual member of the squad.
Yeah.
Even if it was on a rotational basis, you could focus on a Harley story or a Deadshot story week after week and build up their characters and drip feed backstory, whereas partly that's what made Suicide Squad such a mess of a movie.
Yeah, maybe just do backstory in a way that does not involve like a 15-minute long montage of just this is every character and their backstory.
Yeah,
making it look like a character selection off a video game.
We have more information here in this helpful infographic.
Yeah.
Question, were they planning on doing a BPRD TV series?
I don't know. I've never heard of any plans to do one.
Because I'd love to see a BPRD, not a Hellboy TV series, an actual just BPRD TV series. And it could fit around whatever Hellboy movie there was, but it wouldn't need to, because you've got plenty of other characters in the BPRD.
Yeah, it's another one where you could maybe explore Abe Sabian a little bit or something.
Yeah, but not only that, you could do it along the lines of shows like The X-Files.
Yeah.
I think BPRD would be great as kind of a modern-day X-Files, but with actual actual creatures, you know, good creatures investigating things.
Yeah, I can see kind of like BPRD, but maybe cross with something like the Hellboy short stories.
Yes.
So that's more the kind of thing they're investigating.
Yeah.
Because I know you probably have to kind of cut back on a lot of the, like, Ogdru Jihad, end of the world type stuff.
Oh, yeah, but there's plenty of other BPRD stories that don't include those.
Yeah, but I think that is kind of the central backbone of the series.
It is.
But you can move away from that.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of stuff you could go for loads of just real-world folk tales and mythology and stuff like that. Baba Yaga, the Lambton Worm, all sorts of things.
Oh, I know what they could do. They could make the villain like a really famous demon from the comics.
Yeah.
And then they could spend like all series building up to him. And then maybe he appears in like the second to last episode and he's just a man in a tweed jacket. Titans. I forgot to call you out on that last time, Titans. Trigon is just another man in a jacket.
Oh, God.
But it's not a leather jacket. That's the twist.
Wasn't even red.
Ooh, you're bitter.
I'm incredibly bitter.
Given Marvel's penchant for old men, could we have like a superhero old folks home TV series?
No.
Because there's
I'm
old man
vetoing that one.
No, there's old man Logan and old man Hawkeye and there's old man Captain America now and there's old man Quill now as well, isn't there?
Yeah, everyone's got an old man.
even the women.
So basically that would be like a super-powered version of Waiting for God.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I mean, it would bring something new to the genre.
Not necessarily something wanted, though.
Yeah, it's bringing something new in the sense of, you know, that guy who shows up to the party and they've got a bottle of wine and it just says wine on the front.
Yeah.
I believe that was me.
Oh, you are absolutely that guy, aren't you, Rob?
No, I mean that quite literally. I turned up to a very glamorous and posh party at an apartment overlooking the Royal Albert Hall. It was my friend's 21st. They had a bloody grand piano and Mongolian tapestries on the wall. This place was like rich. And I turned up with a bottle of wine and a bottle of tequila. Long story, don't ask.
We didn't.
Good news, listeners. I'm not going to. Moon Knight should have a TV series.
Yes.
Also, do I recall, this may be my senile old brain playing tricks on me, but I seem to remember there were rumours that there were, there was a pilot for a live-action Damage Control series.
Yes, there was.
Oh, yeah, I remember hearing about that kind of way back.
About the time that they launched, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter.
Yeah, I know, because there was that, and then there was also that...
And I
cannot remember the name of it at all, but it was kind of like a workplace comedy in the DC universe.
Well, now, I think they did that, didn't they? Wasn't it called Powerless or something?
Yeah, that was it, but I think it only got, like, half a series and then got cancelled.
Yeah. But the other one that I really wanted, which never happened, was the Mockingbird one.
Yes.
Most Wanted. It's why Bobby Morse and Hunter left S.H.I.E.L.D. to go off and be in the spin-off.
It's something that I feel like I kind of like maybe now that Marvel's doing their thing and they can like maybe commit a bit more to like a full-on sort of weird Mockingbird series. Because like my main issue with that when it was announced is it just sounded like kind of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. but also some more of it.
it did sound a bit like that. But then you didn't get, there wasn't that much of a information released about what it was about, just that it was about Bobby Morse and Lance Hunter.
I think they said that there was Dominic Fortune involved as well. So I'm sure I saw some kind of thing about this giving you a power and they're going to do the spy stuff, spying about.
Yeah.
An uneasy partnership with rogue adventurer Dominic Fortune and his niece, Christina Santos.
I'm disappointed that her name isn't like Christina Lucky or something. Actually, that's another thing. I kind of like more of an actual S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series.
Yeah.
Like maybe with a bit more of a budget, you know, where you can actually do like they meet up on the helicarrier and they've got to do like super sneaky covert ops. I feel like a lot of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was just, it's this kind of ragtag group sort of off to the side from the main S.H.I.E.L.D.
Do you know what I'd love to see? It's a bit high concept, I suppose, but you've read Law, haven't you, Andrew?
Ooh, I don't think you could do a low TV series.
It would be interesting though, wouldn't it?
It would. I just, although
it would.
I was going to say no, that's probably a bit high budget, but then again we do have The Expanse.
Exactly. That's what made me think low is a possibility because they've done The Expanse already.
Yeah, and low is basically just The Expanse but underwater.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. You could maybe actually pull it off.
Because
I couldn't get into The Expanse.
But I found kind of the first half of the first series was quite slow, but then it like really picked up.
Yeah.
Second series was definitely incredible.
Yeah. I think Law would be one of my picks to have a TV series. I'd love to see them. I'd love to see them at least try.
Sandman. I want Sandman. We've had Lucifer, give me Sandman.
I think Sandman. Because, again, Sandman, it's already quite an episodic comic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sandman. And again, you've got that. You don't have to focus on Sandman every time. You can focus on death or confusion or any of the other endless.
You mean, or the cats, which are secretly plotting to take over the world, like I all told you. I told you all and you didn't listen.
Yeah, it's delirium, isn't it? Not confusion.
There's both, I think.
No, because they're all D. They all start with D.
Well, apart from Sandman.
Well,
no, he's Dream.
He's Dream.
On the back of that, actually, I think Sandman's a good one. Transmetropolitan. I didn't remember it until you said Sandman.
Shocking comic book confession time, number 682,000. Never read Transmetropolitan.
Really?
It's all right, you're not alone.
I've heard it's very good. It's just, there's so many comics, guys.
I know. They were thinking about doing a big screen version of Transmetropolitan back in the early noughties, and Patrick Stewart apparently wanted to play the lead role of Spider Jerusalem.
But isn't he quite a, like, scummy alcoholic type dude?
Yeah, with the
weird Patrick Stewart? No, surely not.
I don't know. You'd hear stories from the X-Men set.
What about something like The Wicked and the Divine?
Yeah.
That one that Rob recommended to you. What was it? Beauty something?
Yeah, I think the Beauty. Wicked and the Divine, I'm not sure. I'm still not sure if TV is there, because I feel like it needs to be, like, very showy.
Yeah.
Because, like, a huge part of that series is how glamorous and over-the-top everything is.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure you can capture that on a TV budget yet.
Okay. What about The Beauty, was it?
Yeah, The Beauty would work. Because, again, I mean, I think lots of things, especially indie stuff that's, like, more like police procedural, That's very easy to adapt.
So stuff like Paper Girls and that.
Yeah, and something I finished recently, Kill or Be Killed.
Ah, I've heard good things about that.
Yeah, that would work very well as a TV series, and I think it would be the best way to kind of do the gradual escalation as the main character gets, like, further and further into this idea of being a vigilante.
And I've thought of a left field one, and it'd need someone like a sort of Mighty Boosh team or a Vic and Bob team, that kind of surreal writing team behind it.
I mean, Moon. Or a Noah Hawley.
Yeah, or a Noah Hawley. Legion. Yeah. But yeah. Moon.
Interesting.
Moon would be a... I could almost see Moon as like a kind of maybe Inside Number 9-esque miniseries.
Yeah.
On the back of that, then, I'd go with Tank Girl. There is a story there.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, that's my main worry with Tank Girl, is it's just so very weird and meandering.
Yeah. The thing is, I think Tank Girl would be something more like the Mighty Boosh or the IT Crowd or something like that. Something that's
I guess just like a 30-minute comedy thing.
Yeah. Just something that's completely off the wall, just a 30-minute action comedy thing. That's it. And if it's a bit low budget, then that's fine. It's Tank Girl. It works.
Yeah, I think the worse it looks, the more Tank Girl it is.
Yeah.
Oh, also, I've remembered now, because I know we've talked a lot about Marvel and indie stuff, but I actually had a great idea for kind of a new line of DC TV shows.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah, because there aren't enough of those.
Okay. No, but we're going to scrap all those. Those are yesterday. Arrowverse is done. What we need to do, right, is we start with a Dr. Midnight TV series. And who's Dr. Midnight, you might ask? He's great. See, he's a vigilante. But get this, guys. He's blind.
Wow.
Oh, dang. I know, right? And once that's a guaranteed smash hit, we start following it up with The Question, a.k.a. Rene Montoya, bitter private detective. Steel, the indestructible black guy, and Judo Master, the kung fu one who no one likes.
You can't do Steel because he's in Legends of Tomorrow.
But it's okay because I can't. No. Wrong Steel. That's the other Steel.
Yeah, you've got a different Steel there.
Yes, that is the Steel who is a man whose body is like steel. This is the Steel, who's the man who likes Superman a lot, so he built himself a Steel Superman suit.
And then turned out he was apparently, allegedly, metahuman and could just make his suit himself out of thin air.
Anyway, then they're all going to team up and there's going to be a Justice Society of America TV miniseries.
Oh, yes, Jesse, yes. Oh, God, yes.
And just you wait until we get a kind of semi-unrelated series starring Vigilante.
Oh,
you know, after you know, following up on his hit cameo in Dr. Midnight season 2.
Oh, but why go to all that trouble with that JSA? Why not just go for the old folks idea that I had before.
No, we're going to all this trouble because do you know how long I spent lying in bed thinking, what would be a DC analogue to all the Marvel Netflix series? Too long, Rob. Too long.
And I'm now intrigued because I want to see the season where the ACK plot is the training of the Owls of Dr. Midnight.
I mean, to be fair, Daredevil had quite a few episodes where basically nothing happens. And I think it'd be greatly improved if then he could just go turn to one of his fun pet owls. Well, I don't know, handsome mouse or something.
What? One named Hootie?
Yes.
Is he followed by a bunch of blowfish?
There's also an owl called Charlie. I'm not sure that's an owl.
Oh, see, but Jeff Bob, how dare you insult Charlie? That is a heartfelt tribute to the first Dr. Midnight, whose name, if I remember correctly, was Charles McNider. I love it when superheroes have real names that are basically just their superhero name.
Yep.
My favourite is Marvel villain The Vanisher. He's a man who teleports, and his real name is Telford Porter.
Doesn't Bendis have a new character in DC now? Some girl genius type thing or something. Was her name Noah? Something like that? I can't remember.
Oh, it's Naomi?
Naomi, that's it. Because I tried reading that one and it just seemed like he was creating a character that was meant to go on TV, if that makes sense.
No. No, like many things, Rob, that doesn't make sense.
The way he's basically written the character is just like the character was designed for a TV show rather than a comic. Anyway, Adam Strange.
I like his Young Justice.
Yeah, his Young Justice is good.
Adam Strange. I mean, Adam Strange is one of those characters.
He's basically DC's Dan Dare.
Yeah, I feel like I like him, I just don't know what he does, really.
Adam Strange is one of those weird ones. He's a bit kind of Indiana Jones in that he's an archaeologist, but he gets taken to some other planet, finds a girlfriend, and then becomes this dimension-hopping space adventurer.
Yeah, I feel like...
He's the most annoying part of Krypton, this TV show.
Oh, yeah, that's a real TV program.
I forgot he was in that.
No, you know what? I feel like Adam Strange would be a character I'd like to show up like in an episode of something else. Like when he showed up in Young Justice, that was rad.
I know who should have his own TV show. Booster Is Gold.
Oh, I would watch a Booster Gold TV. Specifically Booster Gold and Blue Beetle.
Yes.
Just palling about. Yes. Being dumb.
Yep.
Accidentally saving the world sometimes.
Yes. And Booster,
yes, DC, do a that.
And Booster's got like his 10 perfect poses, and he practices each one every day in the mirror just to make sure he's got them down pat. It's his morning routine.
Oh, he has a smile regimen, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
If I remember correctly, when I started playing DC Universe Online on the Xbox, Booster Gold was the reason I started muting the vocals.
Yes, that's Booster Gold. Yeah. It's nice to see we all have the same opinion of Booster Gold.
Yeah, except Andrew, who would watch that?
Yes.
Oh, hold on. In November 2011, Sci-Fi ordered a Booster Gold television series.
But it never appeared.
I mean, it probably got lost in the time stream.
Yeah.
Or a bin.
I feel like you're not getting the potential of Booster Gold.
I think it's a lucky escape that they decided not to bring him into the Legends of Tomorrow series.
I think it's a loss for Legends of Tomorrow.
I think it's I'm going to blame that as the entire reason I don't watch Legends of Tomorrow. And also, I did not enjoy it that much. Which is probably more the second thing.
Do you know what might actually be an interesting one as kind of a family thing? Because you remember we were talking about ages ago, Andrew, we talked about Fantastic Four as possibly a TV series.
Did we? We probably did. I don't know. We something, say things, I don't listen to lots of them.
Yeah, something along the lines of an interdimensional, not quite lost in space, but something along those lines that kind of they're more explorers and adventurers than superheroes. And it's more about the family. You got like Johnny and Ben having that weird combative bromance that they've got going on.
Okay, but does that mean we have to give Herbie a good burst?
No.
But that's the secret to a successful Lost in Space series, Rob.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. But on the back of that, though, I was thinking Starman might be an interesting one from DC. Because that's more kind of the title of Starman's running down the family, isn't it?
Yeah, and again, it's a big family drama. Because I think that's fundamentally the important thing about a TV show, is it gives you an opportunity to focus more on like, the characters and the personal dramas.
Yeah.
Rather than just the big explodey set pieces.
Exactly. And Starman's all about, was it Jack Knight is the current Starman? But his dad, Ted Knight, was the Starman before him. And I think his brother, David, was also Starman at one point as well.
Yeah, he was the Starman who did not get a good Starmanning in.
Yeah.
There's also Prince Gavin, who is a Starman in space, but we don't talk about him.
I mean, that would...
Surely a Starman in space is just a man.
See, that would have made a fantastic
counterpoint. But Mick, if you really think about it, Earth is in space.
I
think that's it. We have to stop there.
Yeah.
Hello, do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films, and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out the Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well-staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week, and do it reasonably well.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to 4Panel. We're going to go into some comics now, and kicking us off is Mick.
Yes, I've got Doctor Strange. Oh, and whoever edits this, I want some echo on this bit. Across the Universe!
You had a bit of echo on it already.
I want some real echo.
Put the echo on that bit, because I don't know how to do it.
Reverb.
So, Doctor Strange Across the Universe is a bit of a quest for Doctor Strange. It kind of strips him back to the surgeon who's lost the ability to be a surgeon that we saw. It's basically a repeat of what happens to him before he becomes Doctor Strange, the sorcerer. But this time, he's afflicted by a loss of magic, which in the Sorcerer Supreme is a bit of a no-no.
Oh, so this is following on from the Jason Aaron series, then?
Very probably.
Because in that series, bad science men killed all the magic.
Right. Exactly that, then. What you said. So, yeah, the story starts off with a bit of a battle where he's taking on some hard-ass demon, and it's all, you know, fairly... I am the Sorcerer Supreme. You know, the usual level of Stephen Strange arrogance that you get. 7 years later, he can't even summon his Cloak of Levitation. It's just not playing.
Well, you know, when a guy gets older, it can get harder and harder to bring these things up.
And when he grasps artifacts in his hand, they just crumble and are rendered useless.
I mean, come on, Doctor Strange. It's no fun if you make the jokes for me.
And so you get this sort of descent into despair and loneliness and madness. And in the end, or a month later, depending on how dramatic you want to be, he hits the bottom of the barrel so hard, he asks for help from Tony Stark.
Oh, wow. That's
Oh, Steve.
That's how desperate he is. So, approaching the problem like an engineer would, Tony says, okay, so you can't control the Earth's magic anymore. Get in my new experimental spaceship, fly the stars, and find some other magic.
Damn it, Tony, when are you going to learn not all your problems can be resolved by throwing people into space? This is like the third time now and it doesn't work.
Well, maybe, just maybe, the third time's a charm. Because, reluctantly, Doctor Strange takes up the challenge, gets in the rocket, still has no magic, is caught, imprisoned. In prison, on an alien world, he makes friends with an arcanologist who is looking for objects that are imbued with magical power. A sort of intergalactic Indiana Jones character, if you will.
Oh, fun.
But what
I assume it's not Dr. Aphra from the Star Wars comics, though.
No. So she uses the magic component of these artifacts, but applies science to it. So it's a bit like, you know, in the Middle Ages, the smell of sulfur as someone created a blinding light, later on became us striking a match, and you still got that same sulfuric smell, but there was a science behind it. We understood what was going on. Do that in the Middle Ages, it's magic. Yeah? So it's that kind of difference. She even refers to Doctor Strange as an Earth Billy.
I like that.
And he's got a universal translator implanted in his head that Tony put there. It's the accent that gives him away as an Earth Billy. Basically, we're the yokels of the universe.
I was about to say, it's Stephen, the slack-jawed yokel.
See, now just imagine the coat of the cloak of levitation, but it's been cut into dungarees.
So, he goes along, he goes on this voyage of discovery with the arcanologist. They get into some scrape. She's a little bit reckless. They battle a Kree, a sort of super Kree, in fact. And eventually, and I won't spoil this for listeners, but eventually Doctor Strange learns a very important lesson about his magic and how he can't really take responsibility for it if he doesn't own it. Because basically everything else has been the eye of this, the blade of that, but there's nothing that's the magic of Strange. And that's the sort of journey that he goes on. It's a journey of self-discovery. It's a journey of understanding the magic that he wields on a more deep and personal level. And then when he arrives back home with his magic intact and a new sidekick to boot, it all gets a bit confusing because there's another Stephen Strange waiting at home.
Is this a robot Strange that Tony Stark built just to make him angry?
Don't know. All we know is that there's a man already in Doctor Strange's house talking to Doctor Strange's ghost dog. And the next issue is called The Two Doctors, where presumably one of the Doctor Stranges is played by Colin Baker and the other one by Patrick Troughton.
I think Mick is rapidly becoming our Doctor Spondent, isn't he?
Doctor Spondent,
yeah, basically.
Anything that has the title of Doctor in it is going to you now, Mick.
Unless it's Star Wars rubbish, I don't do that universe.
No, Dr. Aphra is just for Andrew, don't worry.
It is.
Yeah.
She's my special friend, not yours.
You're doing that Doctor under license from the Doctor Spondent.
I do sincerely doubt Dr. Aphra's credentials anyway, so...
Yeah, I'd like to know what she's a doctor in.
But yeah, so this is an enjoyable jaunt. It's nice to see a Marvel hero really reduced to ruins at the start of the story rather than it being a temporary thing just as a plot device. It's the core of his being being stripped away at the beginning and, you know, he genuinely goes into a withdrawal type state. And, you know, you can tell by the way he talks to Tony Stark when he's asking him for help that he really doesn't want to be asking Tony Stark for help because he knows that Tony Stark can only help him because he understands true desperation. So it's a really, for all its you know, you mentioned when we were talking about TV shows, you mentioned about how you can do stories that aren't just the big set piece battles.
Yeah.
This has got some immense set piece battles in it, but it's got that backstory behind it, the soul searching. There's a sort of inner monologue that's written in the description panels, that almost like the handwriting. You know the pirate ship bits in Watchmen?
Yeah.
Where it's written in that slightly sort of scratchy script.
Oh, right, yeah.
A bit like that, yeah. So, I really enjoyed it, and I didn't think I was gonna, because although I like Doctor Strange, I didn't know whether I'd like Doctor Strange in space.
Well, that's good, and it's convenient that you've been speaking about a series that you liked, even though you were kind of worried you weren't going to, and also starring a character we've already just mentioned, because I've been reading Tony Stark, Iron Man, which is...
See, Rob, I told you, planning works.
I mean...
When did you tell me this?
Definitely mostly accidental planning.
Shh.
Oh, come on, they're never going to believe that we intended that.
I was going to say, it's obvious. It's so obvious.
I mean, maybe if this is your first episode of Four Panel, you might believe we'd planned things out in advance. But long-time listeners know.
We tried it once, we didn't like it.
Says the project manager.
Well, we just know that we all happen to be near microphones.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tony Stark Iron Man, which is written by Dan Slott, with for the first four issues by Valerie Oshitti, and colours by Edgar Delgado and Rochelle Rosenberg. And in issue five, art by Max Dunbar and Gang Hyuk Lim, with colours by Dono Sanchez Almara. So, Mick, you finished Civil War 2 yet?
I haven't even started it.
Mick, you aware of what happens at the end of and in the immediate aftermath of Civil War 2?
No.
So Tony Stark is back after that stuff, what happened to him happened.
La 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 la.
You know the stuff.
Yes, I know the stuff.
But it's, I guess it's not that important. What is important is he's back with a brand new company, Stark Unlimited.
Oh, is this that story?
Yeah, this is kind of the most recent Iron Man series. So it's about him kind of basically building himself back up from the ground up. The idea being he's just going to focus on getting the right team of people behind him to kind of solve any problem that needs solving. And it's a fun cast of characters he's got, because you've got Tony, you've got, obviously you've got Rhodey, he's kind of his personal bodyguard / military liaison type guy. You've got Bethany Cabe, who was like a long-time Iron Man character. She's head of security. But then you've also got some fun characters. You've got Jocasta, who is like she's like the Bride of Ultron.
Yeah.
But I guess the easiest way to describe it is kind of like Girl Vision.
She's Robot Woman, basically.
Yeah, well, except like she's not like the brain of a person inside a robot. She is, in the same way that Vision's mind is based off of Wonder Man, her brain is based off Janet Van Dyne.
Yeah.
Which will become relevant when Tony Stark himself starts dating Janet.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Which is a weird kind of love triangle. But it's also one of those pairings that makes a weird amount of sense, but you never really thought of before.
Tony and Janet?
Yeah.
It does, actually. I can't see it lasting, though. It's Tony.
Oh, yeah. It's Tony, and also it's comics.
Mm.
But for now, they're a fun couple. I really like them. And I really like the Wasp. She's one of those characters who I've just really come to love in recent years.
The new Wasp or Janet Wasp?
Oh, Janet Wasp. No, don't worry, everyone. Tony Stark is not dating a teenager in this.
Yeah.
He's not Scott Pilgrim. Or is he? Anyway, this is just... It's a really fun series. It's kind of... I think it's something I mentioned when we were talking about the TV show, is the idea of just having a superhero workplace comedy. And this is the kind of thing I want to see. Like, everyone's got really fun banter and interactions. A lot of the characters, they all have their own storylines, which I think makes this work very well, is it's not just, you know, Tony Stark and about. You've got a lot of stuff like about Jocasta wanting to basically be both in charge of robot ethics, but also wanting to blend in as a human. And then you've got Rhodey, who's basically dealing with the fact that he now has PTSD from having put on the War Machine armor and died more than once. And you have also got a brand new character called Andy Bang, who is like another robotics guy. And he's just fun. It's kind of the new guy who's hopelessly in over his head. And it's so much fun.
You were talking about the workplace comedy. I'm going to slap anyone who even suggests casting Ricky Gervais in the role of Tony Stark.
I'm going to slap anyone who suggests casting Ricky Gervais.
I'm just going to slap Ricky Gervais.
Fair enough, cut through the middleman, Mick. I feel shit.
That's fine. I think Mick wins this round.
Okay, but yeah, I like it because a lot of the stories, they're kind of sort of one-issue episodic things. And it does a really good job of just kind of setting up, you know, this is what the series is about. These are the characters. And actually sort of building its own little world, it feels like.
Awesome.
Like, because I feel like a lot of writers with stuff like this, they kind of just go, okay, this is one of the main series, so we'll just kind of put it in a holding pattern to, like, the next big event. Meanwhile, Dan Slott's out here writing a story in which, like, what if Tony Stark had a suit of armor that transformed into a moped? And then also they were getting attacked by robots who were all controlled through a dating app. And do you know how he defeats the robots? By crashing the dating app, by putting his own profile on there.
I was going to go for throwing them into space.
Surprisingly, in all 5 issues, I don't think he throws a single person into space.
Wow.
Not even Fing Fang Foom.
What? When does Fing Fang Foom turn up?
Issue 1. And so, of course, Tony has to fight him in a giant mech suit, which turns out actually just be to cover the cover to inject him with a nanite Iron Man. Which, actually, thinking about it, surely he wouldn't... Surely Fing Fang Foom is so big that you could just inject a normal-size Iron Man into his bloodstream.
This is true. Or maybe child-size.
Maybe. But it's okay, because what really defeats Fing Fang Foom is the power of music.
Okay.
This series is a lot of fun. I enjoy it very much. It must be a lot of the She-Hulk series that Dan Slott did a while ago.
Ah, that was good, that one.
Yeah, it's that same kind of weird workplace thing that I think Dan Slott is really good at, and I would massively recommend this.
Awesome. Speaking of recommendations, I got something from Rick Remender. This is by Rick Remender.
So this is a Remender... No, that doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. This is written by Rick Remender. It's got art and covers by Eric Nguyen, colours by Matthew Wilson, letters by Russ Wooten, and the art was assisted by John Cottrell. This is something that is in a large hardback edition from Dark Horse. It is gigantic. And that's not me saying that. That is the actual title of the book.
Bob?
Yeah?
Did you perhaps not allow me to see this when it got sent in?
Why?
Knowing that I would immediately pounce on it and kind of snaffle it.
Yes.
I feel like if I had... That makes sense, because I feel like if I had seen a big hardcover Rick Remender book, I would have pounced on that like an angry jaguar.
Yes, I
have
know.
Have you not yet figured out, Andrew, why it is that we all turn up half an hour before you?
I thought that was just because I'm very lazy.
Partly, yes, but it gave us a chance to pounce.
Oh, no. You jackals.
We have to do something to offset your power.
And by power, he means you have the advantage of a car.
Yeah. To be fair, I mean, this is really saving me from myself, since I have a habit of taking far too many comics.
This is true.
And then
this
getting home and realising, oh wait, I'm never going to read all of these.
This is true. But anyway, gigantic. It's split into 5 chapters, and there is a sketchbook at the end. And this is basically, it's a giant robot / kaiju type story that starts off in San Francisco. And it starts off, well, not in San Francisco, so to speak. It starts off 5,000 years ago, and you have a tall, weird-looking alien fella. And he's talking about setting something up. And he's talking about the actors and the stage, and He's designed this new race of beings, but he wants them to be warlike and kind of primitive enough that they still believe in God, things like that. Obviously, he's designing humans, and he's also creating Planet Earth, which is basically... Do you remember the Truman Show?
Yeah.
Yeah. Planet Earth is apparently one giant Truman Show stage.
I was going to say Prometheus, but I'll happily go with Truman Show instead.
Yeah. It's one giant Truman Show stage, and all of the characters, all of Earth's history has basically been, according to this story, one long series of TV shows on a network in the universe. And we are owned outright by some intergalactic broadcasting corporation. Into this mix falls a giant robot that looks like it's going to explode. It falls directly on a girl called Jill and a bunch of other people, and the guy who's in the robot is trying desperately not to kill people. He doesn't want to hurt anyone, but he has somehow been teleported into the middle of San Francisco on a busy day. Thousands dead, buildings destroyed, more people injured. He's being chased by these aliens from something called UBC, who obviously are the network who are owning his backside, since he is one of their champion gladiator hero type characters. He just wants out. He wanted to go home. And he's arrived home because he's from Earth. Something that a lot of people don't realize at first. And then later on the story, you find out exactly who this guy is and why he was so desperate to come home. This is a really good story, I've got to say. It's really well drawn. It harks back to some of the old Japanese masked hero stuff and the Japanese kaiju stuff, but mixed in with some of the B-movies from America during the 1960s and 70s.
Okay, so kind of like Ultraman versus them.
It's an interesting idea. I love the whole concept of the Truman Show in the first place, and having it as aliens doing it to the entirety of the human race. You have this guy who has basically been kidnapped as a child by the aliens and turned into this robot man type thing. He just wants to go home. He just wants a normal life, but he knows he can't have it. So he's determined to free Earth from the UBC, from basically being treated as cattle, not even slaves. Humans don't know the existence of the aliens that are watching them all the time, watching their every move. And
okay, but is he or is he not cancelling the apocalypse?
He isn't cancelling the apocalypse, not in so many words. He does it more in actions rather than words.
Does he dig giant robots at least?
He does dig giant robots because he basically is a giant robot.
I mean, lucky for him, chicks dig giant robots.
Yes, so do I. So do you.
I'm not that fussed about giant robots.
You're supposed to say nice, Mick. What's the point of your God?
He doesn't know Megas like we do.
He doesn't know Megas XLR.
But yes, I've got to say, this is really well written. It's got some interesting family drama, because the main character, who shall henceforth be called Gigantic because that is what they call him, he meets his brother, who's an old man now, who has a daughter who's an adult. The daughter who Gigantic accidentally fell on top of.
Whoops-a-daisy.
Yeah. Obviously, he's angry about the fact that Gigantic has all but killed his daughter, but turns out there's a rival broadcasting organization that wants to hit the ratings by filming the destruction of Earth by destroying the planet core. Everything goes to hell in a handcart. Yeah, it's just action, action, action all the way through. It's kind of non-stop. There are some quiet moments, but then it just goes at breakneck speed all the way through to the finale. And it has some bizarre twists as well, just with it including aliens and stuff like that. Some of it is a bit rushed, I'll be honest. This might have been better being extended into a series, but even with that, the writing is still very good. The concepts are really good as well. You do end up with a character who looks a bit like a cross between the Mekon from Dan Dare and the leader from The Incredible Hulk.
Nice. Also, much more importantly, I won it.
But ultimately, it's a story about a hero saving the world. And I enjoyed it immensely. It was really good. I recommend.
Gimme.
So, if I turn up early again, Rob, on Saturday?
See, I can't verbalise what you guys are asking.
Oh. What does this mean? I'm not going to have to actually, like, look at a clock and think, okay, I should leave at this point now if I want to actually be there on time. Because that's not how I do things.
That's... But the thing is, that won't help because we now know you'll do that. So we'll just be even earlier.
I mean, I'm definitely not going to do that. I'm going to stick to my usual strategy of plenty of time. Oh my God, I'm going to be late.
Okay, fair enough.
Never know. I may leave Gigantic at home by accident.
Oh. He's a cruel man.
He really is.
Anyway, Mick.
Yes, right. Okay. This bit needs to be edited into somewhere around the Doctor Strange bit, because I like to make the editing easy for you guys. So, Doctor Strange Across the Universe is written by Mark Waid and art by Jesus Saiz. Letterer is Corey Petit. And the cover art is by Jesus and Javier Garon and Dean White for issue 5. And it collects issues 1-5 of Doctor Strange 2018.
Awesome.
We're definitely just leaving it here.
Just randomly. Okay. So, do you remember when we came back after New Year? I think it was after New Year, and a trailer had dropped for the Captain Marvel movie. So we did Who is Captain Marvel?
Yeah.
Yes, and I definitely remembered that when we were first planning this episode of the show.
Excellent. Right, so...
I'm lying, I didn't.
Who's up for a quick pop quiz? Have you been revising your knowledge of Captain Marvel?
Are we talking about Captain Marvel? Are we talking about Captain Marvel's son? Are we talking about...
We're talking about Captain Marvel.
Which one?
About Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers.
Oh, right, okay.
Captain Marvel.
See,
all right.
See, when it comes to Captain Marvel, you need to be specific and say it's Carol Danvers.
I'm being very specific. We are talking about Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers.
Right. Thank you.
The one that's got a film that'll be good for the SEO, Rob.
All right,
that's
okay.
The Captain Marvel we're talking about.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So, what is Captain Marvel's real name?
Carol Danvers. I'm sure it's Carol Danvers.
Lawson, Marvel, Janice Vell, Monica Rambeau. Oh,
hang on, you're not going to tell me it's something stupid like Carl Danvers.
Oh, Rob, have you read this one? Secretly?
No.
How did Captain Marvel?
Wait, is her name actually like Carol?
Yeah.
Oh God.
How did Captain Marvel get her powers?
She had an accident involving Captain Marvel.
Well, judging from this exciting new origin story, I guess her real Kree parents put her in a rocket as a baby as their planet was exploding.
Oh, God. I just realised Kal-El, Kal-El.
No, even that's not right. So... Yes, this is the definitive origin of Captain Marvel, which is the life of Captain Marvel 1-5.
Hang on, is she the child of a human parent and a Kree parent, and she's going to bring peace to the two races, one of which lives underwater?
No, she's definitely not going to do that.
So it's not Aquaman then?
No, but there are bits of this where you're reading it and thinking, seen this. I've seen this somewhere.
So that entire Who is Captain Marvel episode
was completely redundant.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Marvel, wasting all our effort.
There we are, trying to build up an audience for your little movie that you've got coming out. And you've just made them look like fools.
It's trying to direct our sizable fan base towards it.
I mean, the thing is, we don't need Marvel's help to look like fools.
This is of truth.
So, this is the life of
strong, independent idiots. We'll do it by ourselves.
This is the life of Captain Marvel, written by Margaret Stoll, pencils by Carlos Pacheco, Rafael Fontarez is doing the inks, and the colorist is Marcio Meniz with Federico Blee for issue 5. And they're doing the present day artwork.
Okay, can I ask, is this like the entire life of Captain Marvel? Or are they just using that as kind of a throwaway title?
It's a kind of throwaway title.
All right, okay.
So there is also...
The Death of Captain Marvel.
No, that's the sequel.
Well, prequel, technically.
So the flashback art is by Marguerite Sauvage, Erica D'Urso and Marcio Meniz, and the letterer is Clayton Cowles. And the Kree design is credited to Joshua James Shaw. So...
But the Kree just look like humans, only kind of blue.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
Okay.
Patience, child. So, what we get is a flashback to years ago and Carol with her family having a whale of a time in their sort of summer home in Harpswell Sound, Maine. And she's having a bit of a flashback to those days, catching lobsters in the river, jumping off the dock, roughhousing, playing with cats, because that's a thing, apparently. And she remembers some of the not-so-fun times of her childhood. But this is while she's having a big fight with Tanalth. And it's clear from the fact that Tony Stark wades in and pulls her off a supervillain.
God, he's getting in everywhere.
Well, actually, to be fair, Tony Stark just instigates it. It's actually Captain America and Black Panther that pulls the two antagonists apart and restrain Captain Marvel. But she's got all stressed. And she's having struggle. She's having trouble breathing, much like I'm having trouble talking. And so Tony sort of says, get some downtime. Go, sort it out. Get your head right, or I'll send you into space. No, he doesn't say that.
I guess at least she can just fly back down again.
Yeah. So she goes back to her hometown, and she hangs out with her family. And through a series of flashbacks, we learn a little bit more about her troubled past. She had an abusive father who was a drunk. And we learn a little bit about the makeup of Carol Danvers, what makes her tick, why she's had this freeze, and why she's got this sudden urge to let stuff out. And it turns out that one of the reasons that her dad turned into what he did was because of the relationship with her mum. And so her mum is sort of being her mum, the mum that she remembers, but there's a strain in the relationship. And a Kree hunter comes looking for a missing soldier from the Kree army. Someone with powers. Someone in a fancy suit. Someone who should be fighting for the Kree and has been tried and found guilty as a traitor. And the only punishment is death by execution.
Oh, no. It's a shame this isn't happening in Infinity War. Because otherwise, Carol could just explain that she's got Soul Gem, but she's not Soldier.
Oh, yeah.
The best part is I have the power to cut that joke if I want, and I'm not going to.
You're happy with that joke, you know that.
So, and the problem is that Carol's brother gets injured during the fight with this hunter, which is not won by Captain Marvel. It's won by Ma Marvel.
Oh, Carol's mum, you mean?
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
And so we get a bit more of a background, and this is where this would have been an enjoyable story if I hadn't watched Aquaman a couple of weeks back. But from that point on, I kind of already saw it. There's even a lighthouse where her parents first meet.
Oh, that does seem very specific to Aquaman.
Yeah. But this is because it's based in Maine and the lobsters and everything, it feels like an Aquaman story that hasn't got Aquaman in it. And if this is the origin story that they're going with in the Captain Marvel movie, if Nicole Kidman is playing Captain Marvel's mum,
that
I'll be crying foul.
I don't know what to say to all that.
I mean, it's an enjoyable tale, and I guess it's probably setting some backstory up for the movie. And if you're new to Captain Marvel, which I largely am, I'm only really aware of her from all the coverage of the movie and from where she sort of stepped into other comics. It's a nice little intro that gives you a bit of background, but it does feel awfully derivative of the Aquaman film and various other troubled hero origin stories.
Yeah, I mean, that is just basically like a kind of chosen one-y stereotype, isn't it?
Yeah. Like I said, it's well drawn. The way they've put the various bits of copycattery together is really nice.
Yeah.
Some really nice artwork. But it's just a little bit been there, seen that.
Hmm.
So, but I have decided that I do prefer Captain Marvel when she's got the long hair.
Yeah, I kind of prefer Captain Marvel with the long hair than the short hair.
I don't know, they'll say maybe like long hair, but also kind of tied back.
Yeah.
So just, to me, that kind of makes sense for the character that she would do that.
Yeah, it wouldn't be loose. You know, it would be tied back. Loose would just be silly.
But then I do also like when she's got the helmet up and it kind of makes like a big mohawk.
Top knot, isn't it? More than a mohawk.
Well, no, because it's not really tied together.
Yeah, I suppose.
Welcome to Four Panel, where three, I mean, two middle-aged and one with the
rapidly approaching
women, yeah, discuss fashion choices.
So, Andrew, what you got to take us home?
Taking us home is just a little bit. I've got Avatar: The Last Airbender, Imbalance Part 1. So this is another one of Nickelodeon's Avatar comics. This one is set kind of after the end of the first series and before the second. And by first, I mean between the end of Last Airbender and the start of Legend of Korra.
Okay.
And follows Aang and his buddies traveling about a world after defeating the Fire Kingdom. So this is written by Faith Erin Hicks, who she did the Superhero Girl webcomic, didn't she?
Yes. The delightful Superhero Girl webcomic.
Yeah, you're a good egg, Faith Erin Hicks. With art by Peter Wortman, colours by Ryan Hill, and letters by Richard Starkings and Comic Craft's Jimmy Betancourt. So this sees Aang and Co. Kind of an undetermined amount of time after the end of the series, which I like because it means like you don't need to have read any of the other comics to get into this. So they decide to visit a village called Cranefish Town, which is where Toph's father has a factory, only to find that what was once a small village has now blossomed into a huge industrial town, but one with violence at its heart, as warring bands of benders fight each other in the streets, as the whole town slides further and further to chaos.
Sorry, I don't mean to laugh.
Are you laughing at the fact that they're called benders, Rob?
I always laugh at that.
We're adults, Rob.
You've met Rob, right?
Me and Mick are adults, Rob.
Admit it, you found it funny as well. You're just trying not to laugh.
No, no. We are proper adults and everything. And that.
So anyway, the two teams of Michael Fassbenders are duking it out in the streets.
Yeah.
And this prompts Aang to kind of get involved with the local council. We're mostly just comprised of kind of all the business owners in the area to talk about maybe setting up some kind of police force. But one of the council members might not be all they seem. Dun, dun, dun. And it's a fun book. Everyone's quite likable. It's got the same kind of tone as the TV show. And I think what I especially like is you can kind of see where things, sort of where the world starts to change in between kind of Last Airbender and Legend of Korra. So it's the start of how things kind of became more and more industrialized, which I think I'd like as an idea for connecting those two series together. But it's also, I think it's a similar problem to the comics I read before, where this just doesn't feel that substantial. Because, I mean, it's mainly just kind of setting the plot up for the rest of the series. I mean, yeah, it's good enough. I'll read more of it.
Cool.
And, I mean, Avatar is a show that I really loved, and it's cool to see some more of that.
Cool.
Awesome.
So, yeah, and I think that that brings us to the end of the show.
Yes, that is the end of the show. So,
parting is such sweet sorrow. Especially yes. When it's parting from you two.
No, that's sorrowfully sweet. Anyway.
I think he just means sweet.
Yeah. Delicious, what delicious. Else? It's delicious, delicious cake. Anyway, all of our shows are available on our website, along with a bunch of other stuff that we do. There's reviews, there's other podcasts. You'll find everything there, along with our Patreon and our shop. That's thegeekshow.co.uk. Our shows are also available on Audioboom, iTunes, or whatever podcast provider you're using. So if you are listening through something like that, then leave us a rating, leave us a review. It does help us with exposure.
Yeah. Oh, hey, just leave us a comment. Why don't you tell us what comic you would like to see adapted into a TV show?
Yes, let us know. We'd be very interested in finding out.
Or indeed, what superhero's origin story you'd like to see retconned from another film?
There is that as well. Okay, so until next week then, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye now.